What could I do now? Was there another place on this island that I could try to go to? Not back to the main part to wait for the winter to kill me. Not back to the Cave of Skulls to wait for whatever horrors were lurking there to overcome me. I had little hope to find anything better, but then I had little else to do but explore my surroundings. It was still rather early in the morning. My climb down, my swim, my visit of the cave, my encounter with the mysterious stranger, my climb up, my masturbating, all this, measured by the sun's inexorable progress on its eternal orbit, had not taken much time. From the point at which I stood, the rim of the precipice above the bay, the only passable route led back to the saddle, and after wrapping my feet in the shreds of my dress again, I took it. From the saddle, I could turn left to the north or right to the south. In both directions, the ground rose steeply, and progress would be difficult, but not impossible. I drank water from the spring and ate some of the sweet fruits, and then I arbitrarily chose one of the two directions, south, and then I just kept walking, or climbing where it was necessary. After a while, it was past noon, I got above the tree line and I had a great view over most of the island. I enjoyed it, but it did not tell me much I hadn't known before. I could see the summit in front of me, and I reached it after another hour or two. I did not try to guess the time, as it had little importance for me. When I arrived at my goal, I saw that I had not gained anything useful. Below me lay the sea, no land or islands in sight, and in all directions but the one I had come, bare rock sloped down steeply. To an experienced climber, these rocks might provide a viable descent, but if I were to try it, I would very probably fall to my death, and there was nothing to make me believe that down there would be anything worth taking the effort and the risk. Turning around, I could see where the saddle was, and in the in section that led to the precipice above the bay, and behind the saddle, I could see the other shoulder of the mountain range rising to about the same height as the one upon which I was standing. From what I could see, this other shoulder held no promises that it might have more to offer than this one had, but still I felt the urge to visit it. Checking the position of the sun, I decided I'd be able to reach the summit before night, and maybe even make it back to the saddle. If not, the thought of spending the night in the open, the hard rock below me, the crescent moon and the distant stars above, held no fear, as long as the weather was mild and calm. This, in fact, was how it turned out. When I had reached the northern summit and found it to be identical, in almost every aspect, to its southern twin, I saw that dusk would fall soon, and anyway I was so exhausted that I thought it better to rest for the night than to descend the cragged path with weak legs and in near darkness. The night was uncomfortable. I was hungry, thirsty, and cold, but it was beautiful too. To see the sun sink into the sea to the west, to see the almost full moon take its path across the sky, to be so close to the stars, of which there seemed to be so many more here than I had ever seen before, and finally to see the sun rise from the sea again in the east. My own mountain, on my own island. I smiled, even though I knew they would not be mine for long. Nothing would. I rose with the sun, turned towards it and took off my jacket, and spread my arms to take in its rays with my whole body. Then I did some exercises to get warm, put on my jacket again, and started my descent towards the saddle. What I would do once I got there, after drinking and eating a breakfast of fruits, I did not care to think about. What it was that caught my attention, already back down below the tree line, I cannot really tell. The route that I had followed I thought of as a path, but it was not a path made by man. It was just as if the mountain and the trees themselves suggested a trail for the wanderer to follow. And here, branching off to the left, was something that looked like a trail leading nowhere. Nowhere was as good a place to go as any other to me, so I turned left and climbed down the scarp overgrown with thicket, and then I stood in the mouth of a small cave. I went in and waited until my eyes adapted to the darkness, to be relieved that it held no skulls or bones or heathen idols, but also to be disappointed that it held nothing useful either. Just a small cave, a good shelter against a thunderstorm, but no place to survive a winter. And then, again, I cannot say what made me look closely into the dark recess next to the opening. I saw the lamp. An oil lamp with a gas cylinder, nothing special about it, except for the fact that I had found it here. It was filled with oil, and there was a box of matches lying next to it. I struck one of the matches on a dry piece of rock and lit the lamp, and then I started to explore the little cave again, aided by the light I now held in my hand. And indeed, what before in the darkness had seemed to be only a shallow niche in a back corner, the lamp's light revealed to be a narrow corridor leading further into the mountain. I had to crawl, I had to hold the handle of the lamp between my teeth, I grazed my naked knees, I bumped my head against the low ceiling, and I had to laugh, thinking once more what a sight I'd be from behind, and I almost let the lamp drop. And when the corridor got even lower, I started to worry whether I'd ever be able to crawl back out in reverse, or whether I'd die slowly and horribly stuck in this hole. And then I was through. To my confusion, despite the lamp, there was darkness all around me. How could that be? But it only took my eyes more time to adapt. Then I saw it. The subterranean hall I had reached was huge. 200 feet long, or even more, nearly half as wide, and, at the center, almost as high. The walls and the ceiling were cragged, but the ground was flat and smooth, and, along one of the walls, boxes were stapled. I looked at them closer. They were food. Canned bread, canned meat, canned vegetables, canned fruit juices. There must be tons of them. And more lamps, and oil canisters, and boxes of matches, and blankets, piles of blankets. And, yes, there was also a batch of can openers. Nothing else, though. No dishes, no cups, no clothes, no tools. But to survive, I did not need any of these, did I? I looked at the canned food again. These were civilian provisions, not military. I had not found a secret Navy base, as for a short moment of panic, I had thought I might have, in which case I would survive the winter only to face execution. No, in all probability, this was an emergency shelter for the expeditions, a place where, should any calamity prevent them to leave in time before the winter storm set in, all men and women could survive. I did a quick calculation. Yes, the food would suffice for them all. Not for the slaves, though. Well, it would be too expensive to stack this repository and renew its content every few years, on the off chance it were ever needed, if it had to provide food for the slaves too. And this explained why I had not known about it. It had not been meant for the likes of me. I took half a dozen blankets, spread them on the floor to make a bed, sat down on it, and cried. Whatever this was, into whatever place I had stumbled here, it meant I was safe. Here I could spend the winter and wait for the next year's expedition to arrive. Could the savages who brought the skulls and the idol to this island, find me here if they returned to perform some dark ceremonies in their cave? No, I did not think so. Why would they even search? And, had they ever found this cave before, I was sure they would not have left it so tidy and unspoiled. Another issue. Whatever food I took would surely be considered theft, and my back, breasts, and thighs would amply taste the whip for it. But as I myself was property, I also had the obligation to keep myself alive, as long as it did not cause disproportional loss, so after my punishment, I would be forgiven. After my punishment. There was only one thing this meant to me now. I would live. I ate, I drank, I lay down, and with so many rules already broken, I started to masturbate again. A few more strokes of the whip, for which I would have to spread my legs when I admitted to this offence. But what did I care about pain in the future now? I did not reach an orgasm, though, until at last, no matter how hard I tried to keep him out of my mind, the nude warrior entered my thoughts again. His bronze skin, his knife, his erect penis, and the memory of how I had lain before him, naked, helpless, and aroused.